Maharaj Pariksit sat on the bank of the Ganga, and because of him, we have the Srimad Bhagavatam. One of the most inspiring and greatest spiritual literatures in the history of the world. There is a story of Ambarish Maharaj. Durvas Munu was offended by a slight mistake that Ambarish made and was ready to kill him. Vishnu saved Ambarish. Durvas Munu, who is such a great, powerful sadhu, ultimately, for the offense of trying to murder this poor grihasta family man, he was on the verge of death. But Ambarish forgave him. Ambarish fasted for 1 year for the welfare of Durvasa Muni, the same man that tried to kill him. That is tolerance. In fact, forgiveness and tolerance are inseparable. The power to forgive another for their injustices and offenses against one is an actual sign of real tolerance. It is the quality of a great person. The power to forgive is of a greater strength than all the nuclear powers on Earth today by billions of times. Because the power to forgive can liberate our soul and liberate so many other souls. But armies, weapons, and entire arsenals of the world cannot necessarily liberate anyone. Jesus Christ forgave the people who crucified him. That was his last prayer. O Lord, forgive them. They know not what they do. We have the story of Thakur Haridas. He was beaten with sticks through 22 marketplaces. He was beaten so severely that no man had ever lived beyond 2 or 3 such marketplaces. But as he was being beaten and whipped, he was praying for the welfare of the executioners. And what did he do wrong? Nothing. He was tried and convicted simply because he was trying to teach people how to love God in a different way than the government believed in God. That's all. He was teaching the same essential universal principles as their religion, but with some different names. And therefore he was sentenced to death. It is described that Vishnu, the Supreme Lord, sent his Sudarshan Chakra to sever the heads of the executioners, because they were hurting his devotee. But because Haridas was praying so deeply from the core of his heart for forgiveness toward them, the Lord's chakra was powerless to cause them any harm. That is the power of forgiveness. Lord Chaitanya taught us Trinadapi sunuchena taro ivasihishnana amanina manadena kirtaniya sadahari. That one should be more humble than a blade of grass, more tolerant than a tree. One should be eager to offer all respect to others and expect none in return. In this state of mind, one can constantly chant the holy names. Let us examine the nature of the tolerance of a tree. A tree will stand in the scorching sun to give shade to you and me. A tree will bear the freezing cold of the winter and give wood to create heat for you and me. A tree will even silently give up its life to give its body to build a house for you and me. That is tolerance. What is a great personality? One who is more tolerant than a tree. Now, this may seem impossible, but it is actually our nature. This is our inner nature. Where there is love, spiritual love, there is unlimited tolerance, there is unlimited humility. Today's class is the art of tolerance. We have examined some of the circumstances within and without that try our tolerance. And some of the great personalities who have shown in the most munificent way how they overcame these obstacles and maintained their character, their integrity, and their spiritual principles, even in the face of difficulties. And we have also mentioned how people fall down due to the inability to tolerate provoking situations. So how does this apply to all of us today? This is the most important question. Most of you are young, with lives ahead of you. There will be many temptations, many provoking situations that will come upon you. First of all, what do we value in our lives as sacred? Most of you are young, with lives ahead of you. There will be many temptations, many provoking situations that will come upon you. First of all, what do we value in our lives as sacred? That is a very important question for us to contemplate. Otherwise, we simply get lost. We just get caught up in the passions of the inner and outer world. What is the foundational principle that we want to live by in our life? This is important. Happiness comes from fulfillment. Fulfillment is when our principles and our life are in harmony. Hypocrisy creates a turmoil of agitation within our own hearts. So really, what is the principle we want to live by? To be a cheater? To be a liar? To give in to lust, anger, envy, pride, greed, and illusion? Or is our principle to be Narottam, first-class human beings, to live with integrity, to live with character, to live with morality, to live with ethics? A person who could live by these principles is a hero. The gangsters, the mafia, the mob people, all those, they're just ignorant weaklings. That's all. They may have big bodies and big guns, and they may control villages and control cities or control governments, but they're ignorant weaklings. Simply conquered at every moment by their lust, their greed, and their ego. No substance. And they die, and they have to pay for all their evils. That's all. There's nothing nice about that. Although in the cinemas and television they are heroized as being great, fearless people. Simply fools. Better, the strongest person is even a simple housewife who lives with dignity and character. And that is a fact. Because it's so hard in this world. In the age of Kali Yuga, what is irreligion is taken to be religion, and what is religion is taken to be irreligion. But for our ethics, our character, and our integrity to have a sustainable foundation by which we can tolerate the storms that will come upon us, we must have spiritual realization. An example, if you build a house with a weak foundation, it will not tolerate the storms that will inevitably come upon it. It will fall. It may be a big, beautiful, magnificent skyscraper with all luxury suites. But when the storm comes, it falls. But if you have strong foundation, it can withstand any difficulty. So in order to actually be able to tolerate provoking situations, we must have a strong foundation. And our principles, our morals, our ethics must be built upon that foundation. Our life must be built upon that foundation. Kolavacha Sridhar was in utter poverty materially, but he didn't want anything else. He was happy. He was offered any benedictions. He was offered wealth. He was offered fame. He would offer power. He was happy in himself because he was tasting the nectar of spiritual love. That is wealth. So first of all, it is very, very essential that we must evaluate in our life what is sacred. What is of utmost importance? Is it just accumulating more fame, prestige, money? Is it enjoying more and more through the senses? Or is it living with character? Is it doing something wonderful for the world by our example? The greatest need in human society is people who live by good example. Bhagavad Gita tells what leaders do, the common people follow. All of you tonight who are here will be leaders of society on one level or another. The example you set, others will follow. Your children. And people around you. So yes, please evaluate what is of great value in your life. To live by truth or to live by illusion? So the question is, are you the body or are you the soul? If you are the body, then so many materialistic ways make sense. But the conception that you are the body really makes no sense at all. The body's a vehicle. The soul is the person emanating this vehicle. At the time of death, the body's there. Where is the soul? Where is the person? Where is the life? The beginning of all truth, according to Gita, is to understand I'm not this body, I am the eternal soul. That is considered to be truth. What are the needs of the soul? To live in harmony with the needs of the soul is human life. To forget that principle is the life of two-legged animals. And what is the nature of the soul? To love. To have equal vision of compassion to all living beings. Whether one is business, engineer, housewife, teacher, student, swami, architect, farmer, whatever our particular occupation may be, to express our values, to express our love, our devotion to God and all living beings through our work. That is the highest life. That is natural life. And in that life, there is happiness. And in that happiness, we have the power to tolerate all provoking situations. So two things are very important. To strive by proper means to actually purify our consciousness of lust and envy and anger and pride and greed. And at the same time, tolerate those provocations by strong intelligence, by strong commitments and conviction. If I am convinced that something's wrong, I will not give in to it. At the same time as conviction, the purification of the heart, the awakening of our original natural love. And that comes through spiritual purification. And in this age of Kali, the most simple and sublime process of spiritual purification is the chanting of God's names. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Haridas Thakur was able to tolerate a most difficult, provoking situation because his heart was pure. So yes, you are all so fortunate. You have such a wonderful opportunity in life to do something wonderful for yourselves and wonderful for the world. By striving for spiritual perfection, by purifying your heart through proper association and the power of God's name. And while performing this wonderful, wonderful purifying process, you will have the strength, the integrity to tolerate provoking situations as they will come, and maintain your principles. I thank you very much. Is there any questions?
Hare Krishna. So, just before we begin the question answers, I would like to welcome the special guests who are assembled here today with us. We have with us Sri T.C. Venkata Subramanian. He is the Chairman and Managing Director of Exim Bank. Sri P.A. Makwana, Chief General Manager, Exim Bank. Dr. Narendra Desai, Chairman, Apar Group of Industries. His Holiness Chandra Mahavir Swami Maharaj. His Grace Gaura Prabhu, who is Srila Prabhupada's disciple. Mr. Rajiv Datta Sharma, Additional Division Railway Manager, Western Railway. Dr. Bhusangari, retired Head of the Department Chemistry, Bombay University. Dr. Reddy, who is a cardiologist at Jagjivan Ram Hospital, Western Railway. Mr. Naresh Saini, Senior Divisional Signal and Telecom Engineer. Mr. Kuldeep Nair, Program Manager, Times Foundation, coordinating activities from Delhi and Bombay with a brighter vision. Ms. Nidhi Gupta, Program Officer, Times Foundation, Delhi. We would like to welcome all of these special guests to our program today by loudly chanting. So now, if there are any questions, you may kindly address to His Holiness Raghunath Maharaj.
Yes, thank you very much for the wonderful lecture, Maharaj. Under the category of envy, you were commenting how every religious tradition has this tendency to say they have their quotes, that we're the best. So, we also say that our Vedic culture, it is the best. And within Vedic culture, of the many philosophies of polytheism, pantheism, and so forth, the philosophy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, that is the best. So, how is that any different than what other religious traditions are saying?
How do you? What's best is that which actually brings about realization of unmotivated, unconditional love for God and compassion to all living beings. Anyone can say we're best. But this is really the standard. Sabai pungshan paro dharmo yato bhakti radhokshaje. Ahoitiki apratihata yagatma suprasediti. This is Bhagavatam's explanation of what is best. And this is what you're talking about, Vedic culture. The fruit of all Vedic literatures is the Srimad Bhagavatam, and Bhagavatam tells what is best. The supreme occupation for all humanity is that which brings about the awakening of loving service to the Supreme Lord. Such service must be unmotivated, unconditional, uninterrupted to completely satisfy the self. So if our thinking that we're best causes us to be envious, hateful, arrogant, then we don't understand anything about our own religion. It's superficial, it's hollow, and it's egotistical. Yes? So if we understand really what our own religion is, then we will be a compassionate well-wisher of every living being as an expression of our love for God. So let us realize that before making judgments about everyone else. Does that answer your question? Hare Krishna.
Thank you.
The Vedas do not tell us to become a Hindu. The Vedas teach us to love God, and that love must be unconditional, unmotivated, uninterrupted. The Vedas teach us to be a compassionate instrument of God's love in this world. Yes? That is supreme religion. Yes.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. Maharaj, I have heard if Vaishnava never gets angry, and if he gets angry, then something really wrong has happened, and the person who is responsible for making him angry gets high reactions. So, is it not, it should be opposite, the way?
Vaishnavas get angry, but they get angry for the right purpose. Do you see that Vaishnav there, Hanuman? He was a great devotee. Did he get angry? He was very angry. He was angry because Ravana stole Sita. But that anger was an act of love for God. It wasn't based on unfulfilled lust. It wasn't because of unfulfilled ego. It was an expression of selfless love. It was for the benefit of all. Krishna incited anger in Arjuna. That was what Bhagavad Gita did. You can't fight without being angry. Yes? Krishna tells Arjuna, fight! Now, how can you fight without being angry? Huh? Especially against the Kurus. Now, Duryodhana was envious. Duryodhana, when he saw that Bhima excelled him, he was envious of him. That means he fell down because he was provoked by envy. But then Yudhisthira, Duryodhana stole the throne that was meant for him, and Yudhisthira was completely non-envious. He was still willing to forgive and to help Duryodhana when he was in a difficult circumstance. That is the difference between a great soul and another. The ability to tolerate provoking situations. Yes? So in that situation, the war was inevitable. And Arjuna fought. But he did not fall out of false ego or unfulfilled lust. He fought for the welfare and for the sake of others. Sometimes when a child is misbehaving, the parent will become angry with the child out of love, out of care. Even act angry when they're not. Just to emphasize a point. Yes? So sometimes when anger is born of compassion and love and an act of service, then that anger is pure. And many times Vaishnavas express that type of anger to teach good lessons, to emphasize certain points, and to protect innocent. But that is completely different from the krodha, which is one of the three gates to hell according to Gita. Lust, anger, and greed are three gates that lead to hellish existence. But anger born of false ego and unfulfilled desires is extremely dangerous and very difficult to overcome. Unless we have very high spiritual principles to live by. Does that answer your question?
Thank you, Maharaj.
Hari Bol.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. I want to know about satisfaction. Can I continue with this?
Yes.
Can I ask some question on satisfaction?
What is your question?
Pardon? Okay. How a person can get satisfaction? Suppose there is a place where he can get complete endless satisfaction. So there are two ways. Either he can go to that place, if it exists, to have an endless satisfaction. Or he just follows his path and gets his satisfaction. Every time, each moment, when he puts forward his legs. So, can you tell me the difference? Either he should go to that place, or he just follow his path.
What is the place that you're talking about?
It's a suppose one.
Means somebody of the ISKCON told me that that we are getting satisfaction over here. If you come over here, you will get completely satisfaction. But I must admit, I am considering this, that if I follow on my path, and
what is your path?
Means what was the, I don't know future. I don't know what my future is. But if I go on, means
what is your path?
That will come now. Anyhow, that will come.
Huh?
Anyhow, that will come.
Anything that will come is your path.
Yeah. Okay, thank you.
If you want to reach a destination, you must know the road that takes you there. Yes? If you get into an automobile and say, I don't know where I want to go, and I don't know which road to take either, I'll just go, and whatever comes, where will you end up? Human life, we must understand where we want to go, and we must understand what is the road that will take us there. Satisfaction comes from a pure heart. As the heart is plagued with the disease of envy and false ego, there can be no real satisfaction in life. It doesn't matter where you live or what you have or who you're with. Satisfaction is within. Satisfaction is the nature of a pure heart. Yes? So how to purify your heart? That is the path of Dharma. That is the path of Krishna consciousness. That is the real path of spirituality. So we must follow that path. And in order to follow the path, we must have proper direction, proper association, and proper principles to live by. Yes? So no, satisfaction is not necessarily living in this building or that building. But satisfaction is an internal state of consciousness. And there is a way of purifying our hearts to attain that state. And if you follow that way, you will find real satisfaction in your life. In our particular path, purification of the heart comes by chanting God's name sincerely and by living by moral ethical principles, by developing a spirit of service rather than exploitation. This is the path that we are teaching, that Krishna is teaching, that all the great avatars have taught, by which there is eternal satisfaction. But if you follow your own way, then you'll simply be bound up by your own karma and by your own ego. However, if you apply the principles of truth according to your lifestyle, according to your occupation, then you can achieve perfection of satisfaction. Grihe thako, vane thako, sadahari bole thako. Krishna doesn't teach to be a monk. Krishna teaches whatever you're doing, whatever occupation, whatever varna, whatever ashram. If you apply these sacred spiritual principles to your life, you will attain everlasting satisfaction in this very life. But if we act whimsically according to our own ideas, then we will simply have a life that is whimsical. There will be no realization or revelation of the real treasures that are within our own hearts. Do you understand? What do you study?
Engineering.
Engineering.
Yeah.
So you want to be engineer.
Yeah.
So you can be engineer.
Yeah.
But you could be engineer living by your own conceptions. Or you can be an engineer with an understanding of your eternal self.
Okay.
Apply the principles of Bhagavad Gita to your engineering career and you will achieve ultimate satisfaction. But live according to your own whims and you'll simply live in the world of karmic dualities without any real spiritual direction in your life. Thank you.
Thank you, Bharat.
Hare Krishna Maharaj, thank you for the nice class. Maharaj, I want to ask that a person may be tolerant in his dealings, but can a nation, a community, a sect be tolerant? Suppose a neighboring nation attacks us, or in that case?
What was the last part of your question? Suppose
a neighboring nation attacks us, then can we be tolerant?
We can be tolerant, but in a different way. Krishna taught Arjuna to be tolerant, but he also taught him to fight. That means we have to be tolerant of our own vices. We must be tolerant of our own ego. And in that state of consciousness, fight to protect the innocent and the rights of the citizens of the nation that you are to protect. That is the duty of a warrior, not the sacred duty of the warrior is not to attack innocent people of another country. It is to protect the citizens of your own country. And it is your duty to protect. In fact, if a burglar comes in to kill your wife and children, it's your duty to protect them. Even if it means to become angry and violent. Yes, it is your duty to protect. But in the process, we should tolerate doing it egotistically. We should tolerate our own vices and actually protect for the right cause. Does that answer your question? Being tolerant doesn't mean being weak. Tolerance gives strength.
Hare Krishna, sir.
Yes?
Sir, I'm first time out here, and I just want my question is not My question is not related to the topic, tolerance. I just want to ask a different question. Like, what does about the concept of death? If one person dies, where does he go? Where does he go? Is it any hell or heaven or just like that? Means, what is death? It's a question which usually haunts my mind, you know. So I just want to ask about that.
There is no such thing as death. Because the soul is eternal. Najayate mriyate bhakadachin, nahanyate hanyamane saride. Krishna tells in Gita that for the soul there is no birth and no death. It is not slain when the body is slain. What we call death is simply a change. Dehinosmin yatha dehe kolmaram yovanam chara tatha dehantara pratya dhiras tatra namugyate. That the embodied soul is in a state of changing. From childhood to youth to old age, yes, the soul is traveling through the various changes of this body. At the time of death, the soul simply changes into another body. The body is changing in life, and at death, there's another change into another body. Vasansi janani yatha vihaya. Krishna tells, like, death is simply a change of clothes. The body is clothes. But that death, which is really just change of body, is inevitable for all of us. And if with identifying that I am this body, there is nothing more fearful and painful than death. Yes? Now what happens at the time of death? The soul has to leave this present body and has to be stripped away from all of the attachments of this body, all of our relatives, our loved ones, our possessions. They are all instantly taken away at the time of death. And where does the soul go? According to our activities and our desires, the soul is transferred to a particular body. There are 8,400,000 species of life, according to Padma Purana, within the universal creation. And every particular species of life gives a particular karmic experience to the spirit soul. So according to the quality in which we live, we think, and we act, we develop karma. And then the soul is transported to a particular body where that karma will be given to us. Or let us say the reactions of our karma will come upon us. Why are there so many species of life? There are birds living out the karma that puts one in a body of birds. You can become an insect. There are also hellish existences for very, very horrible sinful karma. There are also heavenly existences for very, very good and pious karmas. And even within human life, we see people, just by providence, they're born in miserable, suffering conditions and so many misfortunes come upon them. And other people live in very affluent, fortunate positions, where they're very intelligent, very beautiful, and all good things are coming to them. These are all reactions to past karmas of past lives. But ultimately, Krishna explains in Gita, if we remember him at the time of death, then we return to Krishna. We resume our original natural identity, where life is eternal, full of knowledge, he's full of bliss. So the goal of human life is to go beyond karma. As long as we're living within the realm of karma, then we have to take birth after birth after birth after birth after birth to receive the reaction of our karmas. Good or bad. Yes? But when we remember Krishna at the time of death, we transcend the cycle of karma and enter into the spiritual abode where life is eternal, full of knowledge and full of bliss. And that experience is not only beyond life in the spiritual world, but that is also present within our own hearts in this very life. We can attain that state. That is why the chanting of God's name is such a great benediction, because it helps us to fix our consciousness in remembrance of God at every moment, purifies us of our inclinations for sinful activities, for egoistic pursuits, gradually promotes a healthy state of consciousness, a state of consciousness which creates compassion, love, and service toward God and all others. When we are serving the Supreme, those activities are beyond our karma. They are transcendental. So through this process, our consciousness becomes pure, and at the time of death, we return home back to Godhead. Otherwise, for every immoral act we perform, we will have to pay the price. And for every moral act we perform, we will have to pay the price. So to liberate ourselves from this cycle of materialistic karma is the most intelligent and the rarest pursuit that we can dedicate our lives to. Does that answer your question? Thank you.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. Many times the situation is such that we are unable to tolerate and we are influenced by wrong things. But after the impact of that situation, we think that we should be out of such wrong things. So how could we start giving up those wrong things? Just like to start a fan, we need to switch on the button. In the same way, we want to give up those wrong things, but how could we start giving up those wrong things?
The best and easiest way is to replace wrong things with right things. We must tolerate the conditionings that we have toward the wrong things and simultaneously divert that energy to performing right activities and cultivating right thoughts. Yes? If you tell a child to stop playing with a dangerous thing, the child will constantly be crawling back to that dangerous thing. But if you give a child a better thing to play with, then it is easy for them to give up. Yes? So similarly, the mind is by nature very active and dynamic. It needs engagement. idle mind is devil's workshop. Yes? So we must learn to be tolerant and resistant to negative activities and negative thoughts. How to do that? By simultaneously engaging them in positive activities and positive thoughts. You can go to the liquor store to become intoxicated, or you could come to the temple and become intoxicated chanting God's name. Yes? But if you're conditioned to go to the liquor store, if you're just standing on the street, your mind will drag you there. Yes? But if you come here and you chant and you dance, which you'll be doing in a few minutes, you'll become intoxicated with something very good. And then it becomes very easy to tolerate the bad. So the art of living really is to dovetail our propensities in the positive loving service of the Lord. Does that answer your question? Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna Maharaj, can we change our destiny? Bad destiny.
At every moment, your every word and every deed is creating your destiny. We are responsible at every moment for what we speak and what we do. And what we think will induce us to words and action. If we always think of Krishna, our destiny will be Krishna. If we always think of the, if we are constantly thinking of the temporary pleasures of this world, then according to how we're thinking of those pleasures, that will determine our destiny. I think we should end because it's late. I wish to thank you very, very much. Hare Krishna.